Hey, what's up? Hello, future casters. Welcome to season 2, episode 1 of Past, Present, Future Cast. I am your host, Maria Elena. I am an archetypal tarot reader, Hellenistic astrologer, and overall desert witch. And this is the show where I bring you interviews with artists and creatives through the framework of a past, present, future tarot card reading. In this episode, I talk to John Kidd, an aerospace software engineer and the creator of Cosmic Foundry. Find John and his copper jewelry on Instagram at johnkidd with 2 D's, 08, and at Obsidian Orate. Both of those are linked in the show notes. John and I are co-leading a very special retreat this summer up in the mountains outside of Tucson, where we will weave together knowledge from both our cosmic backgrounds. His as an aerospace software engineer who once helped NASA bring a sample of an asteroid down to Earth, and mine as a Hellenistic astrologer who derives meaning from the myths and characteristics humans have given to our celestial bodies by observing the cosmos for thousands of years. We'll talk more about this 3-day event called Birth of the Cosmos in our conversation, but if you want to scope out the details now, visit the link in show notes or head over to persephonictarot.com/events and select Birth of the Cosmos. The last thing I want to mention before we jump into this interview is that enrollment is currently open for my 5-week tarot course that I like to call Persephonic Tarot School. This is 5 classes held once a week on Saturdays from May 17th to June 14th. My goal with this class is to give you a framework, basically a scaffold, upon which you can build and develop your individual functional relationship with tarot cards. Beginners will leave this class confident in reading for themselves and their friends, and experienced tarot students will also find new insights and approaches to grow their personal practice. Learn more or sign up at persephonictarot.com/tarot school. And now, let's get to the interview. All right, I am here with John Kidd. John is an aerospace software engineer and the creator of Cosmic Foundry. John, thank you for being with me today. How's it going?
Thank you, Maria. It's going pretty well. Not a bad Friday.
Not a bad Friday. I should also mention that not only is John an aerospace software engineer and the creator of Cosmic Foundry and an incredible jewelry designer and crafter, but John is also going to be my co-presenter at a retreat that we are co-hosting this June called Birth of the Cosmos. And we are certainly going to talk more about that as we move through this interview today. But that's an important thing to know, is that we're officially going to be co-presenters this summer.
Can't wait.
I'm pretty excited about it. I think it's going to be wonderful. You bring an aerospace engineer and an astrologer together in the same room to talk about the birth of the cosmos. And things are going to get cool and scientific and mythological. We'll talk more about that, but just a heads up for everyone listening, that's going to be in June. So there will be a link in the show notes if you want to learn more about it. But we're here today to talk, John, about your creative journey, your entry into not only like how you started your work in the aerospace world, but also how you've now developed and are evolving into quite the artist and creative. We've got definitely both left brain and right brain working strongly with you. So I'm excited to talk about this. I guess to start, can you tell me a little bit about kind of what your work in the world looks like right now, today, in the present?
Certainly. Thank you. So these days I am working with a company called Kinetics, a intuitive machines company. And there I'm developing a variety of like internal software tools for different types of like mission design, constellation management, constellations of spacecraft, not of the stars, and using that as like communication relays between the Earth and the Moon for future endeavors.
Okay, wow. Okay, so there's a lot of words that were used there that I don't necessarily understand. I did really appreciate the clarification that we're talking about constellations of did you say machines? Not constellations of stars.
Spacecraft.
Spacecraft.
So,
okay.
Yeah, we like to say, like, for example, the GPS satellites are a constellation of spacecraft. There's like I think, 6 orbital planes that each have about 5 satellites in them. No one fact check me. I'm just going off of memory here.
I would be, you know, I'm not, I was going to say I'd be surprised if anyone listening was able to fact check you, but I'm not going to limit my listenership in this regard. There might be some aerospace engineers also listening to this, but yeah, let's not fact check John in this moment. We're just talking off the cuff. But that's fascinating. So some words that stood out to me in all of that: communication between us and the moon.
Yes. So Intuitive Machines is building out a variety of landers, stations, mostly robotic, but the future has a lot of room for possibility that will be established on the moon. Things like their ideas of setting up a radio station on the far side of the moon as a radio telescope, because you have the entire mass of the moon blocking all of the radio signals coming out from the Earth. So that's like a way to filter out all of the noise and just listen to the cosmos.
I can't even begin to tell you how wild that sounds to me conceptually, given the card that I've looked at for the present of your present work and what's come up here, because you're talking about expanding communication and expanding access to I guess maybe data collection beyond the orbit of the moon. I guess I'm visualizing like the Earth and the moon, and it's like, oh, and now there's this whole like region that it's just easier for us to get this information and this data because we're setting up a radio station on the far side of the moon. Me putting this into like major layman's terms, but I'm hearing the expansion of communication and data collection potentials. Is that a fair summary there?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. You're okay. Nail on the head.
Oh, thank you. That feels good to hear. I appreciate the encouragement there. So the reason why, and you said nail on the head, which also is, I just got to show the card. So the card that we've pulled for the present here is the 6 of Swords. So I know the video can look a little fuzzy while we're recording, so you probably can't see this very well, but what we're looking at is a boat. It's traveling across the water. There's a bunch of birds flying overhead. There's a little crescent moon that looks very much like the moon that is currently in the sky right now. As we're recording this, we're just a few days past the Aquarius new moon and that beautiful little crescent. I saw her last night. But one, let's say, talking about hitting the nail on the head, there's 6 nails, giant nails stabbed into this boat here. So that's just a funny, silly little coincidence. But anyone who's heard me talk about tarot and talk about how I see the numbers and the numerology of the minor arcana knows that my number one keyword for 6 is expansion. It's very much about expanding whatever it is that the suit of the card is referring to. And here, with this being the 6 of Swords, swords are referring to communication, data collection, information, anything that's in that like mental analytical realm. So that's just absolutely hitting the nail on the head in terms of what your work is right now in the aerospace world of expanding potentials for data collection in the cosmos.
Yeah, exactly. I also loved the imagery of the boat on the sea. A lot of like astrodynamics, navigation. We like to use a lot of the imagery of navigators on the ocean. So that was just like a fun little thematic touch for me.
That's really cool. I used to watch Doctor Who a lot. Like, I was a big Doctor Who person. I suspect you've watched some Doctor Who, John. That seems like it would
Yeah, I've watched a large portion of like the newer seasons with, I guess, Doctor number 10, if I'm keeping track.
Yeah, yeah.
But I'm more of a Star Trek nerd myself, but I like Doctor Who still.
Okay. I feel like in Doctor Who, in a lot of those like fictional tellings of space travel, I feel like there is the correlation or the metaphor or the comparison to travel by sea versus like when you're traversing the cosmic realms. So yeah, we do have the image of the ship here. And there's also this, I'm noticing this honestly for the first time. I've used this deck for years and years. But for the very first time, I'm noticing a new symbol on here that I haven't examined before. And it's the little symbol of a spiral is on the boat. And so, I mean, that, of course, makes me think of the orbits, like the orbits of the planets and how everything kind of seems to be, from my limited and more metaphysical knowledge of space, like everything does constantly seem to be spiraling inwards or outwards.
Yeah, that's amazing. Very accurate.
So that's your work in the aerospace world as a software engineer. Tell me a little bit about the creation of Cosmic Foundry.
Yeah, so probably a year and a half ago, I think, I've had some like changes in my life and I all of a sudden found myself with a lot of free time and not sure what to do to fill that space anymore. I randomly heard of this place in town, Zero Craft. It's this fun little maker space with like, there's a metal shop, there's a wood shop, there's a jewelry shop, amongst others. And so I just randomly started taking some classes there. In those classes, I had in my head, oh, I want to make this like little bike part in the machine shop, and I want to make it out of copper because Arizona's a copper state. And so I was talking with the folks up there and they're like, well, we don't know. We usually work in aluminum and steel. We don't know how copper is going to behave on these machines. But if you go downstairs to the jewelry shop, they work with copper. You can like figure that out and bring that lesson upstairs. So I go take some classes in the jewelry shop to learn about copper. And then I had so much fun making copper jewelry that I've made a couple hundred pieces of jewelry and I've made zero bike parts a year and a half later. So one day I will get back to that plan, but that has kind of been the jumping off point. And like there will be other projects I'm fiddling with, but jewelry is like the main thing I have going public facing right now.
That original bike part never got made.
One of these days, I'm going to try to do it before 2030. That's my goal. Okay.
That's a very reasonable goal. I think that's a very reasonable goal. And I've seen some of this copper jewelry and it's beautiful. And I love that you're working with copper. Copper is one of my favorite metals to wear as a jewelry piece. One of my favorite colors in general. I don't know if I've told you this, but have I ever, because John and I are also friends in our personal lives. But have I ever told you that my grandfather was a copper miner here in Arizona?
I think so. That rings a bell. I think this has come up before.
Yeah, my grandfather worked in the copper mines for 36 years. He'll always tell you, always point that out. For 36 years, he was pouring concrete. But I do have I love the combination of copper and turquoise, because of course, where you find copper, you also find turquoise. And I'm sure I've mentioned this on the podcast, I have a jar, I'm looking at it right now. It's out of reach, so I can't grab it, but I'm looking at this old jar that I have that's filled with pieces of turquoise that he picked up in the copper mines.
I've got my own like bag of turquoise here. I have no emotional attachment to this bag, but I think all Arizonans have some turquoise just sitting around somewhere.
Yeah, did you just get that recently at the gem show?
That one was, there's a place in town, Old Pueblo Lapidary Club, and they do a silent auction that is a bit of a fundraiser. And I believe that's where I got that bag. But in the other room are my gem show finds, including a chunk of a meteorite. Those are definitely out of reach right now, though.
I heard that you got a big chunk of meteorite.
Big might be a little generous, but like sizable. Yeah.
Okay. I mean, I guess big is a very relative term, and for some of the things that you work on and some of how meteorites tend to exist in space where you might be maybe dealing with them more often, I'm sure your new piece pales in comparison.
Yeah, yeah. And one day I need to do some research, but my plan is to slice, it's one of the metal rich meteorites, so it's a bunch of iron and nickel. And so the plan is I'll like slice it up and make little plates out of it. I'll go into jewelry after I give it an acid bath. That will like make that crystalline structure pop.
Very cool. I love the plans. I'm excited to see what your card for the future is going to be. But you mentioned that you got into doing, you created Cosmic Foundry because you suddenly had some free time on your hands. So we don't have to go into too much detail, but I wanted to ask if that was as a result of some challenges or some difficult circumstances.
Yeah, short answer is a big yes. Yeah. That was kind of just like kind of a death of the old part of my life where I was a lot of stories I let society and my like parents' belief structure put upon me and kind of realizing like this isn't actually working for me. It's just making me miserable and I need to do something different. So that was the shift there.
Yeah. Okay. So the reason I ask that is because this card that came up for the present, that Six of Swords, often comes up. I mean, it very literally describes moving on from challenges and from difficult circumstances. Because the reason why we have this boat on the water, like it's crossing over to the other side. It's crossing over into a new reality, where the swords that are depicted as being in this boat are meant to represent what was learned through challenging circumstances and what you're bringing forward as wisdom and what you're bringing forward as, you know, what the information gained, what was learned by going through the challenges and bringing that forward into a new reality. So I also love hearing you use the phrase like kind of disentangling or rewriting stories that you had been told about yourself and that you maybe had kind of absorbed and were continuing to tell about yourself. That feels very apt for this card as well, of like, yeah, it's moving on from the challenges and rewriting those stories as you move into a new paradigm and a new reality for yourself.
Yeah, that feels extremely fitting. If I didn't know any better, I'd say you planned that card for me.
Right? I know. That's always how it works out with these readings. You saw me shuffle the deck before we got started.
Yes, yes.
So let's talk a little bit about how you got to this point. Like what either, you know, sparked your interest in aerospace engineering, what sparked your interest maybe in we talked a little bit about the how Cosmic Foundry was created, but how has the past that you've moved through already influenced the work that you're doing today?
It's kind of crazy. So yeah, like looking back, my dad's a airline pilot and my aunt on my mom's side, she lives down in Florida near Cape Canaveral. So we'd visit her once a year and she would like take us to Cocoa Beach and watch the space shuttle go up. And so like just being that close to aircraft and spacecraft, it always fascinated me. So I was definitely one of those kids who wanted to be an astronaut who grew up. And for me, setting that to be a more realistic goal was like, oh, well, I can't fly those, but maybe I can design those. And also like kind of a little bit of an irony of fate. I am not that it matters anymore because we retired them, but I am too tall to fly in the space shuttle.
I was actually going to guess that. When you said I wanted to be an astronaut, my first thought was, I think you're too tall to be an astronaut.
Yep. Yes.
How tall are you, John?
Actually, if I'm not slouching 6'4", but when I slouch, which is more and more often, 6'3".
A tower. Just an absolute towering human.
Yeah, the height limit was 6'2", so they got me.
Yeah, you're just right out of that. So, but it sounds like there was a big family influence on entering into the aerospace world.
Yeah. I like just being around those concepts all the time. So like growing up, I was always amused by aircraft. At one point when I was in high school, my dad even took me and my dad would like do glider plane lessons together for a couple of months before that just wasn't working out for our schedules anymore. And so like I've always been fascinated by like the freedom of flying. And then going through school though, like also my whole life, my mom especially loved to tell me like I was very artistic. I think I was just as artistic as everyone else, and just your mom is like that when you're growing up. But they were putting this story on me of like, oh, you're an artist. And so there's a point in high school, the ninth grade, where I was like picking my electives. And it was like, I can either take this mechanical drawing class where I learn essentially and like how to make those sketches that engineers make, or I could have taken a more traditional like fine arts class. And I went the route with the mechanical drawing class, and kind of looking back on it, it's like, oh, that was a very like binary gate for me of, okay, this is how I'm starting my career. And at that point, I kind of wouldn't really, I was like just so focused on that. And there's a lot of like the way society is like, oh, you have to focus on STEM and nothing else matters. So I kind of tried to ignore anything except that. And that worked for about a decade or so. And it led into my career, going to the U of A, going into grad school at the U of A, getting my job on OSIRIS-REx. But it always felt like something was kind of missing in the puzzle. And so that kind of looking back at it, like, oh, there was a day where enough people convinced me art doesn't matter. Don't worry about it. You can't make money doing that. That just disappeared from my life. And once I had the opportunity to be like, what do I want my life to look like? Not what do people tell me my life needs to look like? It was like, oh, actually, I can bring that back in. I can do both.
You can do both. It's a very cool balancing of, I think I said before we started, like left brain and right brain with you that I really appreciate. So I have many things to say based on what you've just said there. One, I'll start with the card that was pulled for the past, because there's a few synchronicities, I think, that are coming up here. And one, talking about that creativity and creative expression and kind of your, even if it was pushed away after a time, you know, people seeing in you that there is an artist inside. The card that came up is in the Suit of Cups, and I think it's one of two suits that I would say are very closely connected to art making. I'd say both the Cups and the Wands, water and fire, are connected to creativity. With Cups and water, it's this kind of like divinely inspired creativity, and I feel like you do take so much inspiration from the cosmos, from the natural world, and the natural world that you see, which I think you have like a really unique view of the natural world, because you are looking at the nature that exists outside of Earth, whereas I think most of us who are not in the aerospace industry and realm, when we think of nature, we think of the things that we can touch, see, smell right around us, what we have access to, you know, taking inspiration from meteorites, like we just talked about, and the cosmos. There is this kind of like divinely connected aspect to your art, which I think is very cool. But the other synchronicity with this card that came up is how you described your past of witnessing launches at Cape Canaveral. The card that came up is the 10 of Cups. And the version that we're looking at here in the fifth spirit deck is a little bit different than the classic Smith-Waite version, but that's the version that I'm kind of picturing in my mind right now. The version of the 10 of Cups we're looking at here is showing 10 overflowing cups. They're overflowing with water. They've got little like goldfishes and things all flowing about them. It's a very fun, cute image, but I'm picturing the classic Smith-Waite version of this card, which shows a family, and we're looking at them from behind, so we're seeing their backs. It's this family standing together and they're watching a rainbow. And so it's a family really actively looking up towards the sky and witnessing something that's happening in the sky. And that just, I can immediately imagine a version of this card that is you and your family witnessing like a space shuttle launch outside of Cape Canaveral, and that being something that you find or that you found deeply inspiring, which is absolutely a word I would associate with this card is inspiration. So I really like that little synchronicity, and I'm going to take note of that for whenever I work on my tarot deck. Maybe we'll put John Kidd and his family in there being inspired by these space shuttle launches.
That would be amazing. I would love that.
So very fun. Okay, let's see. We have covered the past, being inspired by kind of like witnessing space travel happening, deciding that you kind of want to go into that industry, also being told that you are quite creative, but maybe pushing that aside to focus on STEM, then moving through, going to the University of Arizona. Oh, that was the thing I wanted to ask you about, going to the University of Arizona, and then you mentioned working on, I think you said Project Rex.
Osiris Rex.
Osiris Rex. Okay. What is that?
So that was a NASA mission led by the University of Arizona to go send a robotic vehicle to an asteroid, collect a sample from that asteroid, and bring it back to the Earth. In fact, the thing on my shirt is like a very artistic graphic of the asteroid Bennu, kind of going back to like big meteorites. This asteroid is about 512 meters across, so taller than the Empire State Building, if I'm remembering our infographics from a decade ago correctly.
I see why you said that the piece you have is very small.
But yeah, so that was a U of A-led mission that my graduate advisor, Roberto Ferraro, was on the team for. And I had met him when I was still an undergrad and kind of like cycles closing. When I was starting to work with Roberto, he had another grad student just a few years older than me, Dan Wibben. We were working on OSIRIS-REx together, me, Roberto, and Dan. And over the kind of like a bit of a tangent and tying it to the present, Dan left the U of A to go to Kinetics. And I joined the Kinetics team back in December, and Dan is my boss now. So very just staying in a cycle.
Full circle connections.
Yes. Circles seem to happen a lot, don't they? But OSIRIS-REx is like my first kind of big career thing after school and a little bit of in school. It helped me fund my grad studies. And that kind of was, up until that point, I just wanted to be an aerospace engineer. Software had no interest for me up until the point where I was like trying to run these simulations of different observation techniques at Asteroid Bennu. And the existing software just wasn't good enough, and I had to like write my own software to wrap around that software and produce the simulations. And at that point I was like, oh, this is something I need to do. And over the time I began to become like a fun thing and something I was like, oh, I'm actually good at this. So at these days I say I'm like a mediocre aerospace engineer, but I'm a pretty good software engineer. So folks like Dan and the other teams are a very niche subject matter experts, and I'm more of a generalist, but I get to build the software glue that keeps everything together.
That sounds like it's a key aspect of the projects that you're working on.
Thank you.
What was the goal or the question that was being approached? Why were we looking at this asteroid?
So OSIRIS-REx is a fun backronym. Let me see if I still have this. Origins Spectral Interpretation Resource Inventory Regolith Explorer. That is what that stood for. NASA loves our backronyms. And so each of those letters is going to play a role in like what were the objectives of OSIRIS-REx. And that first one, Origin, and this is a little bit of a preview for some content for Birth of the Cosmos. There is a prevailing theory right now of how did life get on Earth? Like, that's one of the big questions, right? And one theory that has been touted is something called panspermia, where life actually came from outside of Earth and came to Earth. And so what folks have noticed with meteorites is these things have amino acids in them, and sometimes they have amino acids we don't see in nature on planet Earth. So there's been a question of like, did those originally come from the asteroids? Because about 3.7 to 4.1 billion years ago, something called the late heavy bombardment occurred. And skipping some of the things, don't want to spoil too much for Cosmos, but it sent a bunch of asteroids into the inner solar system that just bombarded the planets. And so the oldest fossils we can find on Earth are about 3.7, 3.8 billion years old. So the question is, was that life there before the late heavy bombardment and just it destroyed so much that you can't see beyond that geologic record point? Or was there nothing until the late heavy bombardment dropped the amino acids and the water and other hydrocarbons? And then like effectively magic happens at like that step in between amino acids and single cell organisms that we're still figuring out. And so that was one of the things we wanted to see. The asteroid we went to is something called a carbonaceous asteroid, meaning it's not a metallic, it's a mostly carbon. And this one was of particular interest because we would say it is a non-geologically processed. So like when the solar system formed, this is a bit of material that like it was never part of a protoplanet. It never had the thing where like the metals condense together due to gravitational forces and it begins to form like a planetary core. This was just a free floating piece of rock that did not have those processes. So it's like, okay, this is like pristine, undisturbed material from this formation period. So it's like, well, there's going to be some very interesting answers in there. So the sample got brought back to the Earth. 2023 was when it would have landed, October 2023, I think. And it's been at the NASA Johnson Space Center. They have a sample curation facility there. And it's like kind of like just in the sci-fi movies where you have the big plexiglass box with like the weird gloves you put your arms in and everything. And so some scientists have been taking that apart, taking the sample return capsule apart and pulling it out and doing science. I'm not like, it's beyond my knowledge base, but doing the science to investigate that. And they are finding hydrocarbons in there. So it's like, okay, this is a strong indicator that, the asteroids did indeed supply, if not all of the amino acids, there's a chance some material was here beforehand, but the asteroids supplied a sizable piece of that puzzle.
Wow. Okay. So you worked on a project that worked to bring this sample of an asteroid back to Earth so that now other scientists can study it to try to answer that big question of how did life and the building blocks of life come about on Earth.
Exactly. Yeah.
And incredible. So, very cool.
Thank you. We only brought back about 2 kilograms worth of material, but we've distributed that out. Johnson Space Center is like one of the principal labs, and it's where it is getting distributed from. But pieces of that sample have gotten distributed to labs all around the world, and a sizable chunk of it has been locked away so that it will be available for future generations when like more advanced technology exists to do science that we can't imagine yet today. So it's a very, to me, like legacy has always kind of been an important thing. What is the legacy I'm leaving behind? And so like, it's a sample that's 4.1 billion years old, but also ones, like there will be several decades of scientists that will be working with this and trying to solve these big fundamental questions.
I think that really speaks as well to that 10 of cups that we've pulled for your past, because tens are going to speak to legacy always. It's the 10 is that kind of like culmination point that then starts back into a one that brings us back to the beginning of the cycle again. It's kind of like bringing that sample, getting that sample back to Earth is a culmination point for that project, but it's also the kicking off point, the starting off point, the inception point for so many other projects and other scientists and other people to work on to then continue studying and learning more and more. And did you mention also that some of the question you're answering is not only how did the amino acids come to Earth, but also how did water come to Earth? Was that something that I heard, or am I elaborating?
You heard correctly. So that was another thing, is where planet Earth is from the sun. If there's not an atmosphere, water doesn't really occur here. So before there's an atmosphere, where did the water come from? And so that is also part of it. And that's been an interesting thing, is they are if I'm recalling because like at this point in time, I'm off of the mission. So my knowledge base is whatever the public knowledge base is. And I haven't kept totally up to date on the articles coming out of it, but I believe they have found water in the in a frozen form. They found water in asteroid Bennu. And this is a fascinating thing, because we have this mental picture we're taught in school of asteroids are rocky, comets are snowballs, and they are two very distinctive things. And like most things in nature, it's not binary, actually. It appears to be a spectrum. And the difference between those two things is not as distinctive as we always thought it was. So that just always fascinated me, of like, okay, there isn't like a one or the other. It's there are icy asteroids and there are rocky comets, and there are radiations between those two points. So asteroids and also like comets during a late heavy bombardment would have been mechanisms to deliver water to the Earth. And then the heat of those impacts would have gotten them into a free-flowing state and allowed the oceans as we see them today to begin to take form.
Wow. Okay. Amazing. I love soaking in information from you, John, because I will learn six things every time you speak three sentences, you know? And that's why one of the reasons why I'm so excited to be pairing with you to create this lecture for Birth of the Cosmos that, again, is happening this June. Because as we're putting together the lecture itself, I'm learning so much about the literal birth of the cosmos and how did water come to Earth? And of course, as you like to make sure to reiterate, we don't have all the answers. It's all theories at this time, and we're looking at evidence to support, or whatever the opposite of support is, a theory. And now it seems like this is kind of a brand new journey of getting into more of a metaphysical space, bridging some of that divide between what we think of as hard science and what some people might think of as pseudoscience, because now you're pairing with me, an astrologer, to discuss the birth of the cosmos and how our planetary bodies that both of us have such a strong interest, just from very different perspectives, how those came about and came to be.
Yeah, exactly. And likewise, it's been a very fun and educational experience just learning between astrology and tarot, like this language, this model of psyche almost, of like, yep, this is how like what's above relates to us type of deal.
You and I like to talk a lot about fractal.
Yes. Turns out the universe is pretty fractal, actually. The phrase as above, so below kind of comes into my head a lot when we get talking about like the quote-unquote hard science side of planetary sciences versus more of the astrology and the tarot. And it's like, well, it's not like two different systems, it's one system, just different lenses to view it through.
Yeah, very different languages to talk about similar concepts and similar things. Absolutely. So including Birth of the Cosmos, but also there's surely more things that you're looking forward to in the future. What's the direction you're imagining your careers, plural, going in? What are you kind of hoping to bring about in the future? What's the future direction of Cosmic Foundry? I've been really enjoying some of the behind the scenes jewelry making videos that you've been putting out. Now my TikTok algorithm has like adjusted itself to show me flame painting, which I had literally never heard of before until I saw you post about it, because you've been doing that recently. What is it that you're hoping to kind of grow into as we move into the future?
Well, for this immediate year, like right off the bat, so March, I'll be doing 3 different art shows around Tucson, art shows and markets that I'm just very excited to take part in more. For example, last November, I did Made in Tucson. And that was like kind of a wake-up experience for me of like, people would be like, oh, your art is really cool. I'm like, oh, I'm an artist, actually. And like, it took a couple of times of other people saying that before like I allowed myself to like accept that fact. And now going into some of these, like the artisans market, the TMA, the first weekend of March, like that is going to be very fascinating for me of like, okay, I've been accepted into a explicitly artist space, and I now do believe I'm an artist. So like kind of playing with the energy there.
Let's pause to plug that for a second. So the TMA, for those who don't know, is the Tucson Museum of Art. So you're doing an artisans market. What weekend is that?
The first weekend of March. So actually February 27th to March 1st. Yeah, it's a weekend long market like around the TMA building. So also a plug for getting lunch at Cafe a la Carte or checking out the Romero House right there, because all of these little pieces of the community kind of just are playing together. Then I'll be at the Vegan Night Market March 7th. And then we've got the Wild Wild West Convention. So it's a steampunk convention. I've never done one of those before, but I've always been like fascinated by the aesthetic of steampunk. And just this opportunity kind of dropped in my lap. And I was like, oh, yeah, why not? And I believe even you and Rose will be doing some tarot at that as well with me.
Yeah, definitely hoping to join you for a few days of that convention. And like, you're really getting to dive into the artist scene, like as an artist. How does that feel to now like really be able to claim that artist title?
I haven't fully sat in that feeling just yet, because like when I'm preparing and setting up for the markets, I've always told myself I never wanted to like work in a store, because I'm terrified of like interacting with a lot of people. And now it's like, well, I'm at a market. I'm going to meet 20,000 people today. And it doesn't scare me as much now, especially like, I mean, the first hour is still terrifying for me. But like once people just are asking me about the copper, about the jewelry on the table, it's like, okay, I'm out of my own head. I'm just enjoying the moment. I'm in the moment instead of like freaking out in my own head, which is nice. So, panic and excitement.
Panic and excitement. Yeah. It's interesting hearing you say that you kind of haven't really like sat with that reality yet, or like sat with the fact that like, I mean, at least from my perspective, like you're very much a full-fledged artist. You are crafting your pieces and then also presenting them to the world, which is kind of like an important part of assuming that identity. I think everyone is an artist. Everyone has artistic qualities, but there is something about being kind of a working artist. Like you're really a working artist making your jewelry and then putting out into the world. But something that I see in the card that's come up here for the future is the need to really sit with that, and the need to kind of sit with and pause and really take in all of these changes that have happened for you in the last, I don't know what the time frame is, year, maybe two. It does seem like there's been quite a lot of changes. You've been rewriting a lot of stories about yourself, as we talked about with that card in the present. And so moving into the future, there's maybe a little bit of a need to kind of slow down and let all of that change catch up with you so that you can really fully embody that moving forward. Does that feel resonant for you right now?
I think so, yeah. But also at the same time, it's like, well, you say that, and I'm planning on spinning up two more of my brands that I've been prototyping, like turning musical instruments into lamps. So this is definitely a thing I have of, like, I don't really let myself pause and reflect too much. It's definitely a flaw I have noticed of, like, I like the stress of engineering deadlines. And so I might be torturing myself a tiny bit with that. So maybe I do need to reflect on what that card might be trying to tell me.
This is a card that is indicating maybe a pause is coming for you, because we do have the Hanged One here. We do have the Hanged One showing up, which is a card that does really invite us into that just, like, really deep embodiment in this moment of, like, really having to sit in whatever it is that's coming up at the time. But it is a card that's also associated with the sign of Neptune, or the planet Neptune. And the planet Neptune is very deeply connected with divine inspiration, artistic expression. Like, it's very much also like the mystic. Like, Neptune is like the master mystic, the master artist, the master, I don't like using the term master, but it's this archetype that is very much connected with the way that energy flows in the world. And artists are very deeply connected with the way that energy flows in the world. We kind of are, like, harnessing that energy to kind of create what it is that is being created. So it's interesting that the Hanged One is coming up for you as you're really kind of sinking into that experience of being a working artist and receiving that inspiration, having your pieces kind of flow out from you and then flowing them into the world as well. And there's so much about what you're kind of diving into now with the birth of the cosmos. And can I share that you were a student in Portal, the Portal retreat that happened in January?
Yeah. Actually, I was going to mention, if I'm recalling that Portal retreat correctly, the Hanged Man is my life card, right?
Yes. Oh, good spot. Good tarot student remembering their life path card. But there's so much that you're diving into in, like, the metaphysical esoteric world that does not really seem like it's been a part of your life before this. I mean, you just got your first tarot decks. You went on a tarot retreat in January. You're co-presenting at an astrology retreat in June. So perhaps this is less about the pause as we're talking about this. Perhaps this is less about the pause and more about submersion, like more about being, like, submerged. What is the correct word? Diving into the ocean. I think submerged is right too. And this is a very Neptunian thing to, like, be mixing up letters and making up words. But really diving into this esoteric world that is, like, more or less new to you. Welcome to the waters. They're nice. I've been hanging out here for a while.
And returning to water and navigating bodies of water again.
Navigating bodies of water. Every card that has come up here is it shows water. We have so left to right, past, present, future. We've got the Ten of Cups, which these 10 overflowing cups in the suit of water. The Six of Swords, which shows the boat navigating over the waters. And then the Hanged One, which in this deck, the Charlie Claire Burgess Fifth Spirit deck, is someone, they're bound in rope. They're bound in like a shibari style kind of full body rope situation, but they're submerged underwater. They are like in the ocean. They're under the water in this image. So lots and lots of water here. And we're kind of going from working on a project, figuring out how water even came to the earth, now flowing through to a space of kind of diving into the metaphysical waters. So much about spirituality is spoken about in oceanic, watery terms. So there's quite a through line here, which is very fun.
I didn't even make the connection of the looking for water in asteroids, but yep, there too.
Yeah, it's there too. It's there too. So let's talk a little bit about Birth of the Cosmos before we depart here. From your perspective, what is it that we're doing?
Yeah, we're going to have two different perspectives sitting side by side, just going through the history of our solar system and just examining it, hopefully not giving too much of a peek behind the scenes, but the way we've been talking about structuring it, where we'll cover one planet where we both, one of us talks and the other talks before we move on to the next planet, of like no hierarchy of which one is, you know, the right one or the hard science one, but more of just a, yep, there, here are two different perspectives, or maybe others, or maybe perspectives in between these two or outside of these two. But for me, so much of life is like these big questions of where do we come from, but also where do we fit into the world sometimes. And like that question is going to impact most people a lot more than wondering what happened a billion years ago. But seeing like the tapestry of life laid out like that, of like, oh, here's how I fit in, here's everything going on around, here's the ocean I'm floating along on, to use another water metaphor.
I like that metaphor. Yeah, I'm really excited for this because it's such a cool way to bridge, like you said, the hard science and the metaphysical, and coming to the table as a Hellenistic astrologer, a traditional Hellenistic astrologer, which essentially means that I am approaching astrology using primarily techniques that the ancient astrologers developed over thousands of years. So with Hellenistic astrology, we're using techniques that were derived from ancient texts that have been recently retranslated. These are techniques that were lost to astrologers for many decades, if not like hundreds of years. So that being said, the techniques that we're using are primarily based off of the visible sky and the visible planets, because ancient astrology and ancient astrologers, they derived astrological techniques by observing the planets and observing how things that were going on in the cosmos correlated to what was going on here on Earth. So much of this is based off of physically what we can see. And what's so cool is, even though these ancient astrologers didn't have the technology to get as up close and personal as, you know, you, John, have been able to get to the asteroids that you've been working with, or being able to like visually see or with other instruments, like assess, say, the atmosphere or lack of atmosphere on a certain planet, somehow the myths and the characteristics of the planets that the ancient astrologers ended up deriving, like the characteristics that they came to associate with individual planets, oftentimes really track with the physical realities that we have later been able to assess and understand about these planets. So, you know, of course they could see that Mars was kind of red in the sky, and that gave very specific characteristics to Mars in astrology. they couldn't necessarily see or understand that, God, I hope I'm not wrong when I say this, that Mars is composed of a lot of iron, right? Right?
Yep.
Is there iron on Mars? Okay. Okay. The aerospace software engineer says yes.
The red is from the iron oxidizing and rusting.
Yeah. So they didn't necessarily know that that is why Mars appeared red, yet there is still such a strong association with Mars and metals and iron working. So there's these really interesting kind of synchronicities that come about. And that's what I'm so excited for, the way that we're going through, how we've decided that we're going to go through this lecture is by comparing and contrasting. There's absolutely some places where the physical reality of a body in the solar system contrasts with the associations that we've developed in an astrological context. So I'm very excited to kind of go through and be able to just like get into the nitty gritty and like parse it out as we each come from such different backgrounds. So that's essentially what we're planning on doing in Summer Haven on Mount Lemmon in the end of June at Birth of the Cosmos. And to top it all off, we're going to take a look at the cosmos. We're going to get to go tour an observatory. We're going to have a telescope on site to be able to take a look at the stars from our fun little cabin where we're going to be having a slumber party. You can come just for the day of main lectures, or you can choose to stay a couple nights with us in the cabin that we'll have for about 3 days up in Summer Haven, which is on Mount Lemmon, which is about 45 minutes outside of Tucson. So while it will be very, very hot down in Tucson at the end of June, when you take that 45-minute drive up to the top of Mount Lemmon, it's cooler up there, so we'll get to enjoy some really nice weather, be outside, and absolutely nerd out from an astrological and an aerospace perspective.
Yeah, that campfire is going to be a lot of fun to just chat about life, the universe, and everything.
Yeah, it's going to be a lot of fun. So we're definitely hoping that you join us for this experience. You can find more about this. There'll be a link in the show notes. Just check it out. It'll say Birth of the Cosmos. We definitely hope that you join us in June. Before we sign off, any final thoughts, John?
No, you covered cosmos beautifully. Hope to see you there. Can't wait to nerd out around a campfire. Yeah, this has felt like the doing a tarot pull live on stream has been a fun adding some order to just me meandering through my life story.
And that's what I'm there for in the Birth of the Cosmos lecture too, is to add some metaphysical order to the meandering. I have to note before we hop off here, earlier you said something. You started talking about how the theories of how life came about on Earth, and you said, I don't want to spoil anything for the Birth of the Cosmos. And the concept of spoiling something that happened 3 to 4 billion years ago is very funny to me.
Good point. Very good point. Didn't think it
so
through
no
those
spoilers
terms.
No spoilies, but we will be talking about some cool stuff up on Mount Lemmon. Summer camp vibes, campfire vibes, and absolutely cosmic vibes. So, okay, a very last thing now. John, where can people find you if they want to learn more about just your work, your jewelry making, your cosmic foundry, all of those things?
Yeah, you can find me mostly on Instagram these days. My personal account is going to be John with an H, kid, 2 D's, 08. All of my jewelry is on Obsidian R8. And then I do have an account for a cosmic workshop that, just because I've only had the jewelry brand, I haven't posted too much cross-platform stuff yet. But as we're getting ready for Birth of the Cosmos, I'm starting to actually post on that account a little bit more now.
Yeah, so I will throw all of those accounts down in the show notes. Make sure you follow John, check out Birth of the Cosmos. And I think that's the end of this interview, which is very exciting because this is the first interview back for season 2 of Past, Present, Future Cast. Thank you so much for listening. If you liked this show, make sure to subscribe, check out season one, some other episodes on there. And as always, happy shuffling.